Hello, John. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. There's a lot of talk about energy. We talk about we have a coal-fired power plant here in our city, and there's a lot of talk about nuclear and solar and so on, but you're talking about helium-3, and that's something I had not heard of before.
Well, you know, it's interesting, John, that helium-3, our government has known about this, the existence of helium-3 for a long time. Going back to the moon missions, the Apollo missions, when they brought rocks and soil back from the moon, they discovered that embedded in the moon's soil was this isotope of helium, helium-3, that could be used in fusion, nuclear fusion, as opposed to what we currently use here on Earth, fission. Our reactors on Earth right now are fission-based, where they split matter, uranium or plutonium. And the advantage of helium-3 is that in the fusing of helium-3 molecules together, it produces incredible energy. 1 ton of helium-3 is the equivalent of 50 million, with an M, barrels of crude oil. Now, I want to make clear, John, that I'm not a scientist. I'm a novelist. But I learned about this. I learned about helium-3 in the writing of my PI novel, A Truth Stranger Than Fiction. And I first learned about helium-3 back in 2007. And at that time, then-President George Bush said they were making a push for us to go back to the moon. And this was one of the reasons behind this. You know, it was this idea of going back to the moon to mine helium-3. Well, we all know what happened with the Bakken Formation in the Midwest, in North Dakota. They started pulling oil and natural gas out of there, you know, in great quantities in around 2010. And so any talk of helium-3 just died out. But, you know, I became interested in this in the research for my novel. And the thing that's staggering, John, is just how powerful this matter is.
Yeah, you said a moment ago you were talking about, how much one ton would... Was it 1 ton, you
one
said?
1 ton is the equivalent of about 50 million barrels of crude oil. A couple of other numbers that are really impressive. One is that 25 tons, or the equivalent of what would fit into a space shuttle bay, would mm-hmm. be enough to power the entire United States for a year.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
And, you know, the thing is, I'm not advocating, John, something radical like we need to stop with fossil fuels altogether. But we need to be developing this technology now, and I don't understand why the oil companies aren't getting all over this. Let me tell you something. Right now, China has a probe circling the moon. It is scheduled to touch down on the moon, and they're going to be bringing back rocks and soil. They know that this resource exists up there. They're scheduled to go back in 2017. They're scheduled to have a manned mission soon thereafter. And the concern that I have here, John, is that if we don't develop this technology, if we don't get to the moon and stake a claim on the moon and begin mining it for helium-3, the country or corporate entity that goes up there and gets it first and starts developing this technology, they will become the world powers, the world power in the next century.
I see. Chris, we're with Chris Orcutt here on Talk 790, Pensacola Talks. We've got a caller on the line. Let's see if we can connect them. I want to find out if they have a question for you here. Just one moment.
Sure.
Hi, you're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest?
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Teeland. This is Chris Razzo. I'm a friend of Tara Savell's, and
okay.
She asked me to call you discuss an eminent domain problem I had.
All right. Chris, let me ask you a favor. I've got a guest on the phone right now. If you'll give me a call back in the 5:30 time frame, we'll do that, if that's all right. All right.
You'd like me to call you back?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind.
Around five, basically a large generator would be provide enough power to 80,000 people, you know, or a small city. So you know, these are existing technological developments and research, and you know, the question is, why are we not, you know, as a nation, and why are we not, in terms of corporations? I'm not talking about the government just pouring money into something. I'm talking about, why are we not collectively, government, corporations, individuals, pressing for research on this?
It is interesting, and you mentioned that it exists in quantity, apparently, on the moon. Is there a way to synthesize this helium-3 on the Earth, or to manufacture it?
No. The problem, you know, the problem is that our magnetic, you see, helium-3 is produced as a waste product by our sun. Our sun, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it works on a fusion reaction. And helium-3 is cast out as a waste product, and it's sent into space, into our solar system. The problem is that our magnetic field around the Earth repels the helium-3. That's why it's so rare on Earth. But the moon, our moon, doesn't have a magnetic field. It doesn't have an atmosphere. So this stuff comes from our sun, is blown, you know, the 93 million miles across space, and has been embedded in the moon's soil for billions of years.
So we would be looking at mining it on the moon. Reminds me of some old Star Trek programs. Where, yeah, we got to go to that planet.
Yeah, you know, the thing that's interesting, John, is how prescient, how ahead of his time Gene Roddenberry was. I mean, this is not a ridiculous idea. I mean, you go back 130 years ago, before J.D. Rockefeller, people saw this black goo coming out of the ground, and, you know, they didn't know what to do with it. Oh, we can make kerosene from it.
And gasoline was a waste product back then.
Exactly. That's it. Originally, gasoline was just seen as a waste product. They couldn't do anything with it. But then there was the invention of the internal combustion engine, and suddenly there was a use for this. And, you know, the thing, John, is that, you know, these technological developments have always spurned, they've always spurred on great economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the discovery of oil and the use of oil and the use of gasoline powered the late 19th and 20th centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And to implement a new energy source would spur a revolution, an economic revolution, an economic renaissance, a renaissance in technology. It's always been the case that coal, for example, coal powered the Industrial Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oil powered the 20th century. It's you know, it's been over 100 years now. It's time for us to evolve and progress to a new energy technology.
Well, you know, Chris, I think that I'm reading from some notes here. 44 tons of helium-3. Could power the entire United States for a year?
Yes, I've seen projections between 25 tons and what you were just saying, 44 tons. You know, again, you know, because it isn't being done on a large scale, you know, I think those estimates are kind of, you know, they fluctuate.
Mm-hmm.
Another estimate, another number for your listeners is this. It's been projected that there is enough helium-3 embedded in the moon's soil to power the entire Earth for 10,000 years.
Wow.
That really staggered me when I learned that.
That's not what we would call a short-term solution then, obviously. 10,000 years.
And
wow.
I mean, it's not going to be cheap. I mean, there's no way around it. And I don't one estimate I've read, John, the conservative estimate is that it will cost us $1 trillion with a T dollars to do this. That's why I don't think that this is something that can be done by just one nation, and I don't think it can be done by simply government involvement. I think this is going to have to be a corporate government endeavor, and I think it's going to be multinational and multi-corporate, and that's the only way we're going to be able to have that kind of capital investment, you know, $1 trillion. But $1 trillion, I've read that the estimate is that within 20 years, we could be providing 90% of the Earth's power within 20 years.
That's pretty incredible, Chris. Do you have a website where people can go to learn more about this?
Absolutely. I mean, they can go to my website, orcutt.net, O-R-C-U-T-T as in Thomas, .net, or chrisorcutt.com. On there, I, you know, have lots of information about Helium-3, about my books. And again, this is coming from a novelist. I'm a novelist, and this information that I've learned, the research that I've done related to my latest mystery novel, A True Stranger Than Fiction, included a lot of material about Helium-3. But yes, I mean, if your listeners were interested, they should absolutely go there. I recently had an article, too, on AltEnergyMag.com. It's an alternative energy magazine, and where I go into greater detail about this.
Okay, AltEnergyMag.com?
.com, yes.
Okay, we'll copy that down as well. Chris, as Mr. Spock used to say on Star Trek, fascinating. Fascinating.
Thank you very much. I mean, to be mentioned in the same sentence with Dr. Spock is a compliment. Thank you so much, John.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for joining us, and I hope we can talk again, all right? Thank you, my friend.
You have a great night.
You too. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.